Welcome to Insights as a Service, the podcast that, as always, aims to help MSPs get ahead. And today we're doing that by speaking with Kurt Rogers, the Network Strategy Manager from Chorus, about Hyperfiber, the 10 gig access, I think I'm right in saying that, fiber, new fiber version in New Zealand, which for our Australian listeners, it's not particularly applicable, but maybe interesting to see what near perfect can look like. But Kurt, rather than me trying to explain things, why don't you just give us a bit of an introduction to yourself, what a network strategy manager does, what Chorus is, and at a high level, what Hyperfiber is.
Yeah, look, sure. So I've been around for a wee while in this industry and right since the start of UFB in New Zealand. So, you know, we started a little bit later than the Australian NBN. But over the last sort of 10 or 11 years, Chorus, the other three local fiber companies, and with support from partnership with the government, I mean, we've built a pretty fantastic nationwide fiber to the home, fiber to the business network, which is totally world-class and really future-proof. So my role over that time has really been around the long-term technology plan, what's coming down the track from a demand side and a supply side to really help the business focus investment on in the right direction. So XGS-PON, which is the name of the technology that underpins Hyperfiber, is something that I've been sort of covering for about the last 5 years, and it's great to see it in the market now.
Right. And so for anyone who isn't aware, Chorus is the largest fiber provider giving wholesale access to ISPs across New Zealand,
that's right,
north to south.
Yeah, and we've got about almost got a million fiber connections. I think it's probably in the ballpark of 70% of the total fiber, wholesale only, of course. So you know, we sell to a whole range of consumer and business service providers. We've got about 90 different retailers that consume inputs from us. And so we are very much the custodians of that infrastructure throughout the country, and, you know, in combination with there are three other local fiber companies who have different patches, but we pretty much are the largest infrastructure provider in New Zealand.
Yeah, absolutely. And you are the first out with Hyperfiber from memory. I think you guys launched it and then TFF, formerly UFF, Tuatahi First Fiber, then came out with and they've used the same brand name, right? They've gone with Hyperfiber as well.
Yeah, we licensed the brand name. And I think one of the things there is, like, you know, it's great having competition, but effectively, us wholesalers don't really compete because we have our own patches. And so it was useful for the retailers, for the MSPs, to be able to sort of consume similar products across the different fiber wholesaler inputs. Can be very confusing if everyone's doing different things.
Absolutely. So, it's the bane of an ISP's existence. I can say that with certainty as someone who's worked in it. You know, even you guys getting a bit off track probably, but even with your small business fiber, great product, great concept, but it does create that difference between territories, between players when Tuatahi First Fiber Enable and North Power didn't match that sort of enterprise SLA piece. So it starts getting a little bit more confusing, but Yeah,
and look, I think, you know, we are different companies, so the level of similarity in our offerings and stuff is, you know, to a point, I guess, but we are different companies, so we do try hard to make it easier for retailers. And so I think particularly with Hyperfiber, we stepped out in front there and brought Hyperfiber to market, and we're lucky enough the others were keen to jump on board and again provide that consistency.
Yeah, right. So let's just talk about Hyperfiber at a high level. What is it?
Yeah, well, it's the next generation of fiber technology. If I talk about the technology first, so you know, the UFB ultra fast broadband network in New Zealand was built with what's called GPON technology, which really has maximum speeds of 1 gigabit a second. Hyperfiber really, really takes that to the multi-gig era. So we're now talking multiple gigabit per second speeds. And so that's quite a big change. And that's, you know, there have been 10 gig services available for quite a long time. on point-to-point fiber. You know, you can, of course, buy dark fiber and put your own kit on. But I think hyperfiber is really the mass marketization of that multi-gig speed.
Absolutely. It's the speed without the complexity, right? Like there's no network complexity with it.
Yeah, and at a price point that is totally mass market, right? So I think that's the really thing. It's bringing multi-gig speeds to the masses.
Yeah, totally. So, I mean, to put some numbers behind that, you know, if you went with dark fiber in New Zealand, because as you say, you've always been able to get 10 gig, potentially even, you know, 40 or 100, depending how you light it. You've still got the optics, the switching, the network complexity, someone who knows how to manage that environment, and the cost could escalate to you know, 1,000 plus easily, depending on distance of the fiber and exactly what kit you're putting at the ends. 1,000 would be a pretty good result, actually. And then you've got hyperfiber, which, depending on whether you take the 2 gig, the 4 gig, or the 8 gig variant, you've got, you know, price points ranging from sort of around the $100 mark up to sort of 450, which a pretty exceptional price point at the wholesale level, and have allowed you know, ISPs to come in with pretty sharp price points. So, to your point, yeah, I totally agree. It's taken away network complexity and it's made it accessible from a pricing standpoint for the sort of the mid-market, I'd say.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, there's always a role. I mean, you know, our job is to provide the flexibility and the options. And, you know, there's a role for dark fiber, but I think with hyperfiber, it really brings that capability to everyone, because not all small businesses in particular, not all SMEs really have the, you know, have the wherewithal, I think, or the focus to have to deal with building it all themselves over dark fiber. And so again, the hyperfiber is really suited towards businesses who want to focus on their business and just have, you know, the connectivity done for them, I guess.
Yeah. And not to do too much of a sales pitch for you here, but because you guys have actually released that, the business variant, the 4 gig multi-VLAN capable option that has a lot of the capabilities, perhaps with the number of MAC addresses allowed over it still being a slight limitation, but certainly more than the other variants, that does allow that sort of data center environment where you've got, you know, some data going off to, you know, the cloud, you've got some going to another, data center or head office type environment, some going out to the internet as a transit gateway. You can start to get some of that same level of networking complexity that you can probably found people who were choosing dark fiber were looking for.
Yeah, and I think with a couple of interesting things on with COVID, really, I think it's accelerated enterprises moving to the cloud, you know, because you've got to create that sort of, everyone needs to be able to access the enterprise services from home and at work. So it has driven a lot more businesses to move things to the cloud a lot quicker. And also you've got the hyperscalers building data centers in New Zealand, which is sort of a new thing for New Zealand. We always used to have to go transit to Sydney. But now with Azure and AWS building in Auckland and more data centers coming around the country, it's actually pretty exciting for a business to be able to get a multi-gig connection straight into one of those hyperscale platforms. And actually, with the business hyperfiber product, because, as you mentioned, it has those VLANs, you could actually see getting a gig connectivity to one or more of those, you know, private, whether it's a VPC, Express Connect or whatever, to the multiple of them, and then maybe also, you know, in general internet or peering in transit. So it actually gives a lot more flexibility to enterprises to actually sort their private and public connectivity out in a much more flexible and efficient way.
Definitely. Yeah, it's I can't think of, well, certainly New Zealand's a far better place, New Zealand businesses are far better place than Australian businesses to take advantage of all of that onshore compute. Like it's obviously going to be a big couple of years for NZ, and the groundwork's already been done to make sure that businesses can make the most of it. I think something that really strikes me, and kind of, to be frank, always pissed me off about Australia, is with NBN, there's about 7 different access types. There's, you know, FTTN, FTTC, there's fiber to the basement, fiber to the premises, the good one. There's a bunch, right? And each one has different limitations and different, potentially even RJ11 versus RJ45, whereas New Zealand had this standardized fiber to the premise model. And if that hadn't been the case, you really couldn't be in the position now where you could have 4 separate companies taking a very similar approach to branching out from 1 gig access to 10 gig. Is that a fair comment?
Yeah, well, I've been around a wee while in this space, and I've always had very strong, driver for keeping things simple. And, you know, in Chorus, you know, fiber as far as we can has always been the motto. And, you know, we do have a fiber to the node network. So, you know, it's not just mono technology. We do have a really extensive fiber to the node VDSL based network.
Oh, sure.
But that's, and particularly in rural, but that really is, you know, it's on its way out, right? So, you know, the country now has 87% fiber to the home coverage. And so the transition to, you know, full fiber in those spaces are starting to happen. And I think that does make it easier for everyone in the value chain, you know, to focus on a simple product set that has clear, you know, clear differentiations. And when we've got gig plans, you know, 2 gig, 4 gig, 8 gig, I mean, it's pretty simple. Residential SME variants and then your business variants. So keeping things simple, clear differentiation between those products, I mean, it is pretty key to make it easy, because we have this wholesale, retail, you know, end customer chain. You want to make it as simple as you can.
Yeah, no, fair. And what actually drove the development of Hyperfiber? What were the use cases? What was the feedback you were receiving that made you feel that this was the logical next step?
Yeah, well, approach that from two angles, really, because, you know, I'm a technologist, so, you know, sorry, I sometimes start with a technology bent. But, you know, we had built this great fiber network that's ultimately upgradable. And it was about 5 years ago, I got my hands on some early prototype 10 gig PON equipment. I've got an innovation lab in Auckland. And so we put that equipment in, kicked the tires, you know, produced these awesomely high speed tests on it. And, you know, we were at that time scratching our head a little bit going, oh, my God, you know, what is the use case for that? But at about that time, gig was really, really, really uptake was really going up. You know, gig was already quite popular amongst businesses, but we could see gigabit speeds all of a sudden becoming quite popular, even in the residential space. So you sort of sit back then and go, well, okay, we're now seeing gig get significant volume. It's going to be time soon to take that next step. You know, one truism in our space is exponential bandwidth growth. There's always more. It's just growth, growth, growth. So we did sort of take a bet that the demand would come. And it was really just about then about making sure we put it in place at the right time. So we really kicked the tires on it at about 5 years ago. And then, a couple of years ago now, we just started introducing it. So we think we've got the timing about right in terms of making it available for just about when the premium end of the market do need it.
Okay. Is it about the aggregate bandwidth across? So you've got a business, you've got 50 users in an office environment, although with such a distributed workforce generally now, because as you said, of COVID, there's often not that many people working in the single place. And that's actually another interesting thing, right? Like, has the demand or the use case for something like Hyperfiber with these crazy 2, 4, 8 gig speeds actually diminished as workforces become more distributed? Let me go with that question. Is that a thing?
Well, let's deal with that. So interestingly, we actually did some research on this midway through the COVID lockdown, that before COVID, around about 30% of office workers were regularly doing video meetings on a daily basis. Only about 30%. Right. Only about 30%. Now, can you believe that? Only about 30%. Then during COVID, it was like 99%. Yep. Of office workers, whether they were at home or at work, were doing video calls. So actually, video has actually become, you know, 6 or 7 years ago, Netflix became the driver of speed in the residential space. Effectively, Zoom and Teams are the Netflix of the business space. And so even if you've got half your employees at home and half your employees in the office, guess what they're going to be doing? They're going to be having video calls with each other. So rather than having in-person meetings, that hybrid workplace actually increases the bandwidth demand on the enterprise because everyone's going to be doing video calls all the time, and that's become the new norm. The other factor of that too is all of the collaboration tools are all now in the cloud, because you need the people who are working in the office and the people who are working at home to have equal access to that cloud. So actually, I think initially the bandwidth demand on an office may have gone down when people worked home, but I actually think as we move into that permanent hybrid work mode, the bandwidth demand is actually heaps higher because it's video and cloud. And so there's really no reason to have any applications in-house anymore. Everything actually does need to be in the cloud. So it's all about, you know, good, low latency, high bandwidth connectivity. Does that make sense?
And that's where, yeah, it does. And I think it's just about removing any potential bottlenecks then, right? Including potentially at the work from home situation where there's something like a 2 gig hyperfiber connection in, or at least a max 500, something like that, that makes sure that there's, even if there's a 4K Netflix stream in the lounge as the kids are doing something at home at school, from school for holidays, that, you know, your online work experience isn't impacted.
That's right. And you made the comment earlier about, is it about aggregate capacity or individual speed? And, you know, if we think about, I think 23% of customers, residential customers in New Zealand are now on gig fiber. So it's pretty amazing. 23% of our fiber connections for residential consumers are on gigabit. So, you know, most New Zealanders have expectations that connectivity is just incredibly fast. And so, you know, you might have three or four people in your household sharing a gig. And when you go into the office, you know, you don't want 30, 40, 50 people sharing a gig, because that's just not going to be the same experience anymore. So there is that thing that's, you know, people are getting used to the experience at home, and that does need to translate into work. And like today I'm at home, my wife's at home, one of my kids is at home. And so it's the simultaneous use that drives that demand. And with hyperfiber, we can really think about it as being like a motorway. Each lane, you know, multiple gig lanes, or a gig in each lane, you could say. So the some of the early adopters for hyperfiber do have some use cases for multi-gig speeds for a single application. Like we've had some customers in the sort of TV production industry, you know, they're transferring raw film footage for editing purposes. When you're transferring that stuff, multi-gig speeds for a single application are important.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I think generally the use case for hyperfiber is around multi-gig, multi-lane connectivity, so that everyone in your office can, each person and each device can experience its full speed at the same time.
Mm. I was just thinking, so again, I'm speaking to you from the Gold Coast, and what we find often is that when our team are working from home, there are some things that they just can't do effectively from home because the connectivity sucks. Basically, there's typically a maximum of about, you know, 100 down, 40 up, and it's potentially flaky and copper last mile. So it's the experience varies wildly. And that means that the office really becomes the hub of productivity, but it does then, again, limit that flexibility in how the team operates. You know, if you prefer to work from home, there are some experiences that just won't be great. We get a lot of issues even on just basic things like video calls when the team are distributed. So yeah, New Zealand is in a very fortunate and productive situation right now.
I mean, I think it's going to be different for everyone's circumstances, but my own experience in my own company, the performance is much better at home than at work. Again, you know, a lot of people have a gigabit connectivity at home, and so when you've got multiple people at home, you know, during a lockdown, gosh, I've got three kids at school age kids, and you know, we would have been having five video meetings at the same time, plus, you know, working and various other things going on, and it's all pretty seamless. Yet, you know, in our particular situation, our enterprise LAN wasn't quite ready for all of that video traffic. Right. And so, you know, it's been upgraded now. But I think that's something that I've certainly heard about, is that there's a lot of upgrading of enterprise LANs to cope with that video capability. Again, because that's been a massive shift. And of course, video, you can't have congestion with video. Latency, the whole experience is quite important, that you have masses of capacity. Yeah.
Yeah. I think, I've written blogs on some of the factors that limit the ability to make the most of hyperfiber. And because you are bringing this 10 gig access in, you know, there's limitations on cabling, Wi-Fi, routers, you know, firewalls. What are the most sort of common barriers to uptake, or at least making the most of hyperfiber in an office environment that you see?
Well, I guess you've hit the nail on the head that hyperfiber completely removes your WAN as being a bottleneck. So bang, all of a sudden, no bottleneck in the WAN anymore. But of course, that'll just expose if there are any other bottlenecks in your enterprise or your business LAN environment. And it's sort of, I think it's quite specific to individual companies, depending on how you do it. I mean, if you firewall everything, then your firewall is going to be an issue. And so it really depends on how you segregate what you do with your different connectivity, you know, whether you're doing private connectivity to a cloud and you're approaching the security there differently or not to your internet connectivity. So I think it is quite specific to individuals. I mean, there's a lot of SD-WAN, which means you can go over the top of that hyperfiber connection. So I think every business is quite different for the specifics, but clearly, you know, hyperfiber will expose where the rest of your bottlenecks are. And so it is about taking that gradual approach to really look at what needs to be upgraded and focusing on that your employees and your business systems are able to get the best experience that they can.
Yeah, I think that's where the MSPs really have an opportunity to consult, design, and change the approach. Like sort of game-changing technology like hyperfiber can change the approach to security generally. Whereas if you've got a firewall, some sort of centralized device that everything goes in and out of course it's going to act as a firewall. But you know, we work kind of name dropping here, but we work quite closely with Zscaler, right? Like this hosted security application stack. They've got a couple of variations, but ultimately that's sending the security element to the cloud, and there is no bottleneck there again, right? That's, they look after that. So there's ways of fundamentally changing the way that you look at your network design and your security elements, I suppose. So yeah, I think technology like this is great for the channel, for the MSPs, because it does give them new ways to look at things and new ways to justify improvements in design.
I think so. And look, it's, you know, I'm a sort of an infrastructure guy, but if we're, you know, so, you know, with MSPs and with the you know, their end customers, it's not my expertise space, but I do know that everyone's different, and often you're going to have your upgrade cycles. And so you may be, you know, in a 3-yearly contract or upgrade cycle. And, you know, a lot of time it's digital transformation initiatives that really get the headline within a business. And so I think you want to try and link your infrastructure upgrades and your connectivity upgrades to that overall cycle, and make sure that when your organization is, you know, significantly changing towards digital and cloud, that you make sure you get your connectivity layer sort of in lockstep with that. So I think there's a lot of work to do there, I think, but I think hyperfiber does ultimately remove bandwidth as a barrier. Mm-hmm. And so that creates a lot of opportunities, I think, to successfully move to the cloud. And
cut you off there.
No, that's fine. Yeah.
Okay. Sorry, too fast out of the gate there. Just in terms of hyperfiber, when was it first released?
Well, we did a trial. So we did a limited launch, I think December 2020. Yeah, but that was a very limited launch. Just two cities, and then we rolled out most of the coverage last year. And so we gradually made it more available last year, initially the 2 gig and the 4 gig plan. So okay, it's really about being only in the mainstream market for about a year now.
And how's uptake been? How's the, I guess, the market awareness and the uptake generally?
Yeah, it's quite modest. And I mean, that's what you expect when you bring in, leading products into the market. As a wholesaler, again, we sort of, we don't get to sell it to the end user. So we sort of have to bring it to market, I guess, before there is demand. And then, you know, we know that it will take a while to get demand, because for MSPs, you know, MSPs, as I was saying earlier, a lot of enterprises go through 3 or 4 year sort of replacement cycles or investment cycles. And so I think we're expecting that, you know, that growth to accelerate. I think it's fair to say over the last year, the uptake has been really around some of the innovators, you know, some really niche use cases and some people who are fast moving, and some of the MSPs that are more innovative and are looking to acquire new customers. It's a great opportunity to, you know, to look at acquiring new accounts, because you can offer something quite different. And that'll become a lot, it'll grow a lot over the next few years as people get used to it, as people have built their sort of systems and provisioning systems and Assure systems and support systems to be able to consume and use that Hyperfibre product. We'll certainly expect it to be scaling up a lot more over the next few years.
Yeah, bit of a brag here, but Lightwire, we had the first Hyperfibre connection go live with Enable in their space, and UFF, I could be wrong, we were certainly amongst the first, if not the first. And Chorus, we've done a number of installs with now. I think there's probably just been a couple of things slowing it down from what I can see. One is just that technology piece, people just understanding how to make the most of it, you know, what sort of precursor work has to be done to really pave the way for it, and mapping that out. And I think, you know, been a pretty crazy couple of years with a few other things going on. So
yeah,
maybe that's not ideal as well. The other piece, I think, is just one of those immature products where it's getting more and more mature, and we'll talk about tail extensions in a second, because I think that's going to be quite a shift. But there has been some sort of slight pain where perhaps installers haven't been as aware of the product, or perhaps certified to get someone connected on the product, and that's kind of put some people off until they feel like it's more safe to order. I've had some feedback from the channel on that. So I guess just on that sort of training piece for the actual people on the ground installing the services, is there a program of work there just to get everyone aligned and capable of installing that? And I only ask because we had one the other day where whoever turned up actually wasn't able to actually install a Hyperfibre service. They weren't certified in some form. So that particular partner was like, well, I would need to know that's not going to happen again before I keep ordering these for my clients. So do you guys have a process underway to align everybody with capabilities in the field?
Yeah, look, I'm not sure the detail there, but definitely we have a number of service companies that we train and we roll out specific Hyperfibre installation and training courses. You know, we do have quite a large service company technician, footprint, because, you know, we've been doing, we did over 100,000 fiber connections, last year. So we've got quite a large, technician fleet. Some specialize. But when you're dealing with the whole country, it does take a while to do the training and upgrading skill sets. That's an ongoing process to roll that out more. And it's sort of you get a bit of a chicken and an egg. The more demand, the more training, the better the experience. And so I think it is fair that we're in that learning phase of getting, and, you know, it, as it scales, the experience will get better. And that's a sort of a bit of a self-fulfilling exercise, really.
I've also given you a hard question, particularly at a time when it's very, very likely that situation was related, at least in some way, to the fact that Omicron's going crazy through the country. And it's very likely that whoever was supposed to do that install probably couldn't. And there's a whole bunch of scenarios that probably mean that it's not necessarily the norm. So that's me peddling it back because I feel bad. I did want to talk about tail extensions. What can you tell us about those? What they are would be a good thing to start with, I guess. And then, what the plan is to roll those out.
Yeah, so the basic service model around UFB, and I think this is that the layer two service goes from, you know, the Ethernet port on the ONT inside the business premises to what we call a handover port. In New Zealand, we call them handovers. And those handover locations, there's about 30 or 40 around the country. So, and that's what we call the access service. So that's the base service. So if your end customer is in Auckland, your handover point's in Auckland. If your end customer is in Napier, your local handover point is in Napier. Now, it's not always convenient for MSPs to connect with Chorus at all 30 or 40 locations around the country. So we have our tail extension services, which at an individual service level enable you to extend that VLAN or that stacked VLAN back to anywhere else in the country you want to go. Now, we've had tail extension available on our sub-gig products for forever, really, and that's been really useful so that the MSP can choose how many locations around the country, you know, you want to locate your edge. And so that is something that will be that we, I don't have all the details of timings, but it's definitely something we'll be rolling out initially for 2 gig and 4 gig. It's a bit more challenging doing that for 8 gig because
it's a bit more challenging
for doing that.
I think you guys are starting with Auckland and Wellington or something. There's something going on there. But I think May 7th is the date I saw for the 2 and 4 gig and some very limited 8 gig tail extension options.
That's right. And look, I'm sorry, I don't have all the details and timing on that. It's quite a big infrastructure upgrade for us to make sure. I mean, we do have a nationwide, you know, fiber network, and just making sure that the protection, the resiliency and capacity to support that tail extension service is, it just takes a little bit to roll out.
So, and that actually leads on to a nice segue to this other question, which is the SLA in terms of, you know, latency. Particularly, I suppose, jitter, latency, congestion, really, from between the last mile and that tail extension service. Are they just the same, essentially, whether you take it off a, like, handover, you know, an Auckland service in Auckland or an Auckland service in Wellington, hypothetically, probably a bad example, two pretty major centers, but you get the point. Is the SLA around that the same?
Yeah, I think so. Well, there's some differences there because obviously the distance, right?
Sure.
Yeah, so you know, you're not going to... I'm just trying to think from memory, if you're taking high priority, you know, class of service, I think you're stretching me, Brendan. I have to.
Yeah, no, look, and I'm asking a question I don't know the answer to. So yeah, I got
that. But you know, obviously if your tail, if your local circuit's in Invercargill, which is the bottom of the South Island, and you wanted it handed over in Auckland, yeah, no, it's not going to have the same SLA. No. It does take sort of, I think it's 20 milliseconds, it's 2,000 kilometers. So, you know, you work out the speed of light. So the SLAs, you know, are
wrong person to tell that, ask yeah. to do that.
Yeah. Yeah. So they are stretched because, you know, it's just the speed of light over distance. So, but the great thing about fiber is that, you know, that is pretty consistent. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's calculatable. And if you run congestion free, which is, you know, what we run congestion free, and then even more if you take high priority, it gets prioritized. Yep. You do get incredibly consistent from a jitter perspective, and so it's quite predictable.
Yeah, so maybe a better example is if you're in Invercargill and your ISP has a nearest handoff in Dunedin, the chances are of seeing a difference between an Invercargill handover and a Dunedin handover are pretty minimal. You're not going to see a huge spike in latency or anything like that because the distance involved just isn't that huge. You probably see a couple of milliseconds maybe in terms of that round trip time. If you're trying, that's really too, only if your end target is also an Invercargill and you go to a round trip to get back there. It's probably, you know, and I think that's kind of the thing for tail extensions. For me, they're great in that they allow smaller players in the New Zealand market, smaller ISPs and their MSP partners, to access more locations without huge
That's
capex.
Right.
The negative from the end user or the MSP perspective is that if you're engaging with an ISP that doesn't have as many handover locations, potentially some paths, A to B paths, will have higher latency because you've got to do a round trip to some further afield location. So just it kind of depends on case-by-case basis, but it's certainly a good thing for removing the barrier to entry, I think, for this product line.
Yeah, one thing I would say, Brendan, I know you've just frozen there, but I'll predict your question, is interestingly, with, you know, with cloud being in, with the data centers mainly coming to Auckland for the big hyperscaler cloud things. So if you're really after low latency to those hyperscalers, then it's going to be distance that dictates that. And so, you know, Invercargill to Auckland is 20 milliseconds round trip time. And that's just a factor of distance. So whether, so taking that, getting tail extension service, you're more likely to get an optimal path because it's all coming through our network. If you take a local handover and then backhaul it, I mean, you're still going to end up with 20 milliseconds. So really, I think a lot of that low latency is really dependent on where the target is for the low latency. And often that's to do with the data centers, which is great that they're coming. So again, it's all about where the content is, where the edge of the network is. And, you know, we do expect that to push further around the country over time.
Yeah.
And then, you know, that'll lower latency for everyone.
I'm not actually quite sure, but what do we know what's going into the, is it the data grid facility down in Southland? Do we know, is there any big sort of content providers or application stacks going in there?
Yeah, I'm not sure about that one. The, you know, the obviously the two things that I think are sort of reasonably public and known about is Azure and AWS are both building regions in Auckland. And so that's the, I guess that's the bulk of it. Obviously, there's a lot of private data centers where anyone can host content. And again, they're spreading around the country quite well. So I think New Zealand's very well placed with low latency. I mean, in Auckland, you know, if you do have an end customer in Auckland, I mean, it's 1 millisecond latency.
Crazy.
I think the SLA is a bit higher than that, but the reality is it's 1 or 2 milliseconds latency from almost anywhere in Auckland to one of those data centers. And that's pretty amazing what you can do with that, you know, and it's 3 or 4 milliseconds if you're coming from Hamilton, 10 or 11 if you're coming from Wellington. So I think having that low latency capability is with the data centers, as they spread around, you combine hyperfiber and those data centers, and New Zealand's well positioned.
I was just thinking as well, and I'm probably going to get this horribly wrong, but I should really stick to my sort of marketing sales lane. But is there an opportunity using that tail extension option? If you had a provider, maybe provider A, who was using tail extension services via, you know, ISP A to get to, you know, handing things off in Auckland via the Chorus network essentially, but then you had provider B, who had their own handover locally and then, you know, third-party agreements with the likes of, say, you know, I don't know, Cordia or Vocus or someone to construct their own network, just creating that diversity that, although there's probably elements of Chorus throughout both. I'm just thinking about like how you could utilize that to create some level of backhaul diversity to create that resiliency, even if you're using ultimately similar last mile access. But again, just...
Yeah, that's a good question for your team, I think, to work on. And certainly, you know, Chorus provides the input products to make that choice. So, you know, and, you know, different types of products in that last mile, as well as different backhaul products. So tail extension service is just one of our backhaul products. We also have regional transport. So that's just the classic DWDM, OTN type, you know, wavelengths.
Yeah,
I'm
pretty sure we buy some of those off you.
So, you know... Yeah, and so look, our job is, you know, we provide options in the access and options in the handover and options in the backhaul. And of course, we're, you know, always keen to help you guys get the right mix of inputs together.
All right, cool. Well, before it gets too salesy from you and too way out of my depth trying to suggest backhaul options that probably don't exist, I should ask one last question to finish off, which is, where's it going? Because... Nick Phillips in our team, he mentioned that he saw something from you somewhere where you're talking about 25 gigs. And, you know, I'm sure that's not ready for market or anything, but it might be an indication of where this technology can go. Where do you see it heading and what sort of time frame?
Yeah, well, Chorus are one of the founding members of a global a group called MSA, which is around bringing that 25 gig PON standard, or to make it a global standard and bring it into reality. So we've been part of that for a couple of years. Now we've actually building a proof of concept demo of 25 gig PON in the lab as we speak. It keeps getting delayed because of COVID, to be honest. So we were planning to do that about 6 months ago. But actually, so we've got the kit in our lab now, and we're just sort of putting it together. And so 25 gig is the next step. And the reason why that's quite attractive is it's an easy upgrade path. So there's also talk about 50 gig and 100 gig. At this stage, they look to be a bit more like a forklift change. And so it's always a balance around how you migrate and transition. The nice thing about 25 gig is the wavelength easily fits into the same strand of fiber as GPON and XGS-PON. So we can definitely run GPON, XGS-PON, and 25 gig PON on the same strand of fiber. And that's a really significant issue because it means it's much easier for end users to swap and upgrade without having to send trucks out into the splitter and regroom things and do all sorts of complicated things. So that's the pragmatic next step is 25 gig. So we're doing a trial on that soon. And then, you know, we'll see how that goes over the next couple of years in terms of if and when we introduce that. Then I guess behind that, there is, you know, again, talk about 50 gig and 100 gig. And so, again, we would want to like see how that matures and progresses before making any final decisions about what we bring out next. 25 gig is also quite interesting because that's, you know, borrowing some of the scale of economy economics from data centers. Data center optics, you know, 25 gigs quite popular from a data center optics. And so you're seeing a bit of convergence there around the economics and the scale of some of those optics. So there's a little bit of a watch this space, I think. 25 gig, to summarize, 25 gig seems to be the logical next step, but there's a couple of other options there that we're closely monitoring before we would make a decision, next decision.
Okay. Well, if 8 gigs was making ISP network managers kind of have some sleepless nights around managing capacity and expanding capacity, 25 gigs will make them lose their minds. So that'll be interesting. I was just thinking too, whoever your sales lead is for the regional backhaul product must love all these faster access speeds as people just keep, ISPs, I imagine, keep asking for more and more into metro backhaul capacity. I know we've certainly ramped it up.
Well, I mean, I think it is all, at the end of the day, it's all coming from consumers, business and residential consumers. I mean, we're seeing 21% compound annual growth in data usage. That's exponential. It just keeps growing. You know, the average connection speed on our network was just 10 megabits a second 10 years ago. The average data usage was just 10 gigabytes. You know, we now have over 500 gigabytes a month as the average data usage. Most of that's in the residential space, of course. And, you know, average speed is 200 or 300 meg. So that's a massive increase over the last 10 years. And I think the same order of magnitude increase is going to happen over the next 10 years. So it really is consumers and the big tech companies that are driving all of that. I think people like Chorus and the MSPs are, stuck in the middle of that. We need to keep supplying that bandwidth.
Yeah, well, if Zuckerberg's right and his ilk, and we're going to get ever more immersed into this online world, that's only going to drive that bandwidth demand one way. So
that's correct. And so that's, I think that's quite an exciting future. And so looking out, you know, going back to one of your first questions around why, you know, why we would look at hyperfiber. If we go back, you know, the previous decade was very much around making gig the mainstream. And I think this decade is very much, we're going to see multi-gig become the mainstream. And then, you know, let's move on into the 2030s. Gosh, you know, we're going to be talking about tens of gigs as the mainstream. And if you look back in history, that's roughly the trend that happens. So we like to think ahead and we like to plan for the future. And so I think hyperfiber is, you know, that's the key thing, is it's really setting us up for the rest of this decade.
Man, that is a perfect way to play out this episode. So thank you so much for joining us. Really appreciate you taking the time. And again, sorry for messing you around. I think this was our like third attempt to lock this in. So really appreciate you making it work.
Cool. Thanks a lot. And great for getting up early.
Thanks. See you later. That's it for this week. Thanks again to Kurt for joining us. If you want to follow him on LinkedIn, Kurt Rogers, he often posts a lot of interesting stuff around those capacity trends on the Chorus Network, and also what they're doing with some of this leading edge technology. Nick will be back with me next week. We've got one more episode before we take a little bit of a break for Easter. That remains going away, and we don't know how to do things if he's not here. So with that said, thanks for listening, and we'll see you again soon.